Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back, or actually, it's going to be taking me a little while. It's now or never. There we go. It's now or never, folks. We realize that what's going on in this country with our government and our public servants is absolutely unacceptable. Unacceptable. Let's be clear. We can no longer do nothing. So it's now or never. You have to make your choice, because if you want to look at what life can be like, just start looking at these communist countries. Just look at what they're doing and look at how they are oppressing people. So what we're going to do, because we got a little bit of time left in the year, we're going to cover the Tory Acts, and I will wrap up the Tory Acts today, because it's going to take me 2 days to cover how to set effective goals, because I don't want to gloss over the importance, because if you really want to be successful, you need to have some of the basic background, some of the basic understanding. Now, I've yet to have anybody tell me that they don't want to learn here or me repeat, because I think sometimes we need to be re-energized. We need to be re-engaged in setting effective goals and how to do that. Because are you successful enough? I guess that's the best question. Do you believe you're successful enough that you don't need any help or advice? So I'm giving it to you unsolicited. You're getting your money's worth. And as a matter of fact, I tell that to people all the time. You're getting your money's worth out of this because, you know, you're not paying a penny. Nobody pays a penny that I know of to listen to this radio show. And so that's the beautiful thing about radio. It is at not cost. You know, television used to be that way, and it still is for those people who have antennas that still receive those broadcasting signals. But local television channels will end up dying, and they will stop broadcasting. Then what are you going to do? Do you have legal recourse to force your radio show, or you force your television show to broadcast because they can't cover the costs anymore, because more and more people are going to alternate sources? Because the real reason why local television even existed was for the news information, things going on in the community, so that you could kind of have better knowledge. And if you look at that, that is even fallen by the wayside. And I say that just because most people don't care. The bigger stories, if it bleeds, it leads, is what is going to be making it to your television screen. Even in your local market, they do not have, nor do they want to cover that much detail. They're not trying to provide. Originally, they wanted to provide a community service, and that's how they got you hooked. But all of a sudden, it's this entertainment and, you know, this cutting-edge technology that they're able to, you know, transmit with digital. And pretty soon, we've lost sight of why we have local television. One of the things that you probably do get, but it's a travesty, because, and this is, goes back to these utilities, right? Because when you look at cable, when you look at internet, I'm telling you that you should be able to get basic internet at cost. Basic internet. Just the same thing with your phone. Everybody should have it, and it's an infrastructure the government needs to provide. One of the things that, because when you look at television, what's the one channel you never watch, but is probably the most channel, the most important channel that is offered to you? And that channel should be your local civics, your local government, council meetings, and those things, as well as your state legislation and what's going on at your state government. It's kind of like the C-SPAN for local government and your C-SPAN for the local state. State span, let's call it that. Those are the two most important channels a person could watch. If you want to be informed with what the heck they're doing or what they're really not doing, there you go. And now you can say, I now understand what the problem is. It is our public servants. And if that's the case, then you have to be the one to stand up and say, I'm going to replace my public servant. And we'll help you. We'll help anybody that if now I want a caveat, we'll help you if you are a constitutionalist. And I say that because I actually have reached out. And when I see people that are running and they're trying to differentiate themselves from the current tyrant or the current swamp creature, there is a gentleman in Idaho who was running, and he basically broadcasted, and we happened to be somehow friends. He broadcasted, he wanted me to like his political page. And so I came back to him and said, well, what's your position on the Constitution? Because we need to talk if you want me to like you, you know, because that's an endorsement. And we started going back and forth, and come to find out my last message to him, God, we do this in Messenger. I don't try to call people out. I'm not trying to get all up in somebody's game, if you know what I mean, and, you know, get into their head. I legitimately want to help you if you are running on the Constitution. Because my first advice would be that you need to go and get the Constitution Party endorsement. And as a matter of fact, in so doing, then that means that you should be tested regarding the Constitution. Anywho, so my final comment to the gentleman was, I guess I should presume that you're a conservative, not a constitutionalist, and we'll leave it at that. And so, because there's lots of people that are running that are conservative, and they serve themselves very well in the swamp. If you have not seen that video on our important information links page, go to Reclaiming the Republic, go to the important information and click on that link. It's the video, we downloaded it. So you if you want to, you can download that video and you can share it in your community meeting. These are some of the things as you start leading in your community, what you need to do. And I kind of like the model we have locally. What Northwest Grassroots does is they actually have a movie night once a month. And they show TV, you know, videos. They provide these really informative videos and go, wow, what are you going to say? What are you going to do about that? Interesting. But so anyway, we've got all sorts of ideas. We'll actually cover those starting on the 3rd of January. And we just want to kind of let you know that our focus coming in 2022 is winning. Our focus is getting people to support the Constitution or getting rid of those who refuse to. And so we're working, and I'll give you a little another insight. We're working with the Constitution, what is it? Constitutional Alliance, Mark Lerner and that group of people. They write constitutional legislation. They write legislation that is actually designed to get the state government, you know, more constitutional. So we're actually working with them. We're going to be creating some legislation for your counties and legislation for your states. So that, you know, we can actually, one of the most important ones that we really want to, I think I want to focus on first, is getting your state government to pass a law that makes it easy for the citizen to blow the whistle. And, you know, I just want to dive into this real quick. I know I've only got 2 minutes before I run out, and we got to get into the Tory Acts too, but I just want you to understand that as we look at what has happened to the working environment, that it has become against the law in most states for a company to have a hostile working environment. Well, that's good. That's a good thing. But we shouldn't have a hostile government. We shouldn't have hostile public servants. And so why is it that they don't have, you know, because we have it in the Constitution, the petition for the first for the redress of grievances, First Amendment petition, and we also have Section 3 of the 14th Amendment. Why is it that we the people can't blow the whistle and demand a judgment, not by a court, but by the people, of whether somebody has violated their oath of office and an enforcement of that? And so what we need to do is we need to get these states to start passing these laws, because I'm going to tell you, you're going to find out who's really a friend of the Constitution, who isn't, because there, you won't find any public servant today serving today that would be willing to back that unless they were forced. And it would force them out of their swamp themselves and getting money from lobbyists and being able to play in, you know, the room where the money is, because that's where government plays, is the room with the money. That's why you look at Rand Paul and you find Rand Paul taken, you know, going down the path of actually violating his oath of office by having and demanding that the federal government give unconstitutional money to the state of Kentucky. I mean, all of these guys, all of these people in Congress, every senator, every congressman deserves to be removed. Congresswoman, female, doesn't matter. They all deserve to be removed because not one has done their constitutional duty in calling for the militia to be deployed on that southern border, period. Anywho, let's move into the obligatories. This show is also sponsored by republicreview.org, and you're listening to the only show that gives you the academic evidence and academic evidence-based solutions. Don't forget, Fortitude Financial Coaching, Timber Nation, Radio Dust Covers, Constitution Education, all of these I endorse along with Ad Local. And in breakneck speed, I've kind of covered the obligatory, so we can really get into the Tory Acts. When we come back, I'm going to tell you a couple of reasons why these are so important. Therefore, we will be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much. If you run a business or an organization, you already know email is an essential tool for communicating. If you're interested in reducing your overhead and increasing your productivity, I personally recommend you look into AdLocal email marketing services. AdLocal has a special offer for my listeners with email services that start at $10 a month for your first 1,000 addresses. If you want to increase customer retention, grow your market presence, track your statistics, and improve your engagement with your customers with modern, elegant emails that express the personality of your business with emails that integrate with your website, you need to contact AdLocal, and they handle the rest. Take it from me, AdLocal offers the best solutions for all organization sizes, and they lead with their pricing and the 24-hour customer service. Folks, it's time to call AdLocal at 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with Republic Review, they can enforce compliance to their Constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as Republic Review. Please read my argument for Republic Review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. Friends, if you have any questions or comments, we have our 24-hour comment line at 425-270-5416. Okay, well, let us move into the Tory Acts. And so what are the Tory Acts? The Tory Acts were acts that were actually written in 1775 to 1776. And later on, they added to these things. It was kind of like this paradigm that the colonists... Now, I want to be clear, the colonists were creating as they were beginning to revolt against the existing government of the colonies, their own government, right? I mean, this was a revolution that the Tory Acts were a part of. And I believe we need to revisit these, and you hear me say this all the time, that we need to revisit the Tory Acts. and we have everything we need within the Constitution and what I was basically stating regarding legislation. We absolutely, we the people, we the local level politicians need to be able to clearly articulate when any public servant or any part of government is a violation of the Constitution or a violation of their oath of office, period. We need to have a whistleblower system on our government where actually whoever's having the whistle being blown upon them, it's almost tantamount to treason. And when we're talking about, if you understand Section 3 of the 14th Amendment, we're talking about your qualification. You are no longer qualified to be a public servant if you violate that oath of office by not supporting the Constitution, and actually that you support rebellion against the same. What do you think's going on our southern border? That is rebellion against our Constitution and the laws of this land. The federal government has, within the Constitution, the powers, because they inherited these powers in 1808. The states originally for 20 years had the powers, and then the federal government took over all powers regarding the migration of people. And they've created laws, the migration of people, people wanting to come here, and so doing that they immigrate. They come and they through a port of entry and say, I'm coming to America because I want, and now we have these caps, we have these limits. You just can't, you know, show up and expect to be able to be let in. I think we limit it to maybe 1 million people a year. Well, that doesn't do it for these progressives who are trying to destroy our constitutional republic. This is why they've been sending the messages to the people south of us, because they'd be doing it to the people of the north of us if they could just get them to leave. Now, Canada is becoming pretty oppressive. They may actually migrate here, but they would probably do so through the ports of entry, because most of them are of a society that really believes that they have laws and that they, and most of them are trying to fix the country that they're in. So the paradigms are a little bit different between those of the South and those of the North of us, and that may have a lot to do with culture, government, the legitimacy or the illegitimacy or the oppressiveness of government. But the fact is, a country has a right to establish who is qualified to be a citizen. And there are ways that a person, even with the birthright of citizenship, should be revoked and or should be actually taken away, where you can't vote, and actually removed because you support a form of government that is not only antithetical, but would actually topple, undermine, and destroy the government of the people, the liberty-loving people here in America. And so the Tory Acts actually did that. When they wrote these laws, to identify, to arrest anybody who was supporting the British. That the Continental Congress was clearly delineating, saying, hey, look, anybody that's supporting the British is actually supporting, you know, forcing us into an oppressive state. And we, the colonies, are claiming independence. They haven't done so yet. So when you look at the dates of these things, the very first one was done October 6th. Now, before I actually read this, because it's only one sentence or three lines. Before I read this, I want you to understand that by this time, the colonies had created a illegitimate government because of the oppressiveness of Britain. In other words, they were all, as they were, if you look at what they were doing, they were all committing treason against the crown, because they created these things called committees of safety, committees of convention, committees of correspondence. They had different names for these different committees, but these people were elected representatives of the people. The people in these counties, they literally started creating this government. Now, it wasn't like everybody was involved, and as a matter of fact, obviously, those who were British supporters, there were some counties where there were more British supporters than there were, you know, not. And so they probably didn't create a, you know, openly commit a or create a committees of safety. But the people that were anti-British rule did start doing this. So when they started electing people, they actually started creating these elections and appointing who would be their delegates to represent them. And in so doing, they're creating a republican form of government, not actually turning their back on the monarchical government. When you understand what we're talking about, going into committees of safety today would absolutely be, as far as I'm concerned, it could easily be construed as treasonous, and it becomes this, well, no doubt, it is not a legitimate form of government. We have problems with our own government, but you don't go and create a new government and throw away the Constitution. We have everything we need within the Constitution to correct these problems. Because I guarantee you, anybody that goes down the path of creating a committee of safety is basically throwing out the Constitution. And there's no guarantee that when they're all done, that they will actually be able to keep that Constitution. This is why we have to use the processes within the Constitution to actually get people into compliance to the Constitution. This is why Madison and Jefferson did exactly what they did. Now, when you read the resolutions, I want to point out that Jefferson did call for committees of correspondence and conventions to be created, not committees of safety. Committees of safety is the local representation. State legislators could create committees of correspondence where they would have, you know, a couple of people that were actual state legislators that would be on a committee for a convention or a committee on a correspondence in working with the other states as state government to state government. That's what he called for. He didn't call for committees of safety. There's a big difference. Committees of safety is where the people are trying to organize. I'm just telling you right now, you do that, you've actually created an illegitimate government. We have a mechanism, and that mechanism for your local level is to get rid of your county commissioners and get people in there to actually represent you. Same thing with your county committeeman or county committee woman. They've expanded it to almost most all states have county committee men and county committee women to represent the county at the state legislature. We've talked about this. And so we're going to talk more about this after January 3rd so people can start, you know, we're going to go through this again, putting all the pieces together. So you may want to actually start, you know, pulling these hours in. And if you want to start creating informative meetings, you should be able to just take these sound bites, these podcasts, these MP3 files that we're putting up, and you should be able to edit those so that people can hear the meaty parts. And go, there you go. This is why, this is what we need to do. Okay, so back to these Tory acts. Continental Congress, October 6th, 1775, resolved that it be recommended to the several provincial assemblies or conventions and councils or committees of safety. So they're identifying all of these, how each of the colonies started creating their own local governments. Not all of them created committees of safety. They created councils. Each government, each state, each colony, they were all independent. They kind of had their own way of doing it. But all of them started creating a representative government. And when they created the Continental Congress by, you know, basically voting for who would be their representative at Continental Congress, all of this was done in secret. They didn't, you know, they didn't do this in front of the crown. The Continental Congress was not operating in front of, you know, all of these British warriors and generals and admirals. And so, I mean, this was all done in secret because they knew what they were doing was actually putting off a government based on the, you know, Declaration of Independence to abolish and to actually create a new. That's what they were doing. And so anyway, so all of them had these different ways. So you're going to find that they go through this laborious process of saying whatever organization you've created, such as the provincial assemblies or conventions and councils or committees of safety. And then this is what they basically resolved to tell them to do: to arrest and secure every person in their respective colonies who's going at large, in their opinion, endanger the safety of the colony or the liberties of America. In other words, the Tories were people that were considered loyalist to the Brits. And so they were telling them to actually be able to do this. Now, if you look at how the Revolutionary War was fought, it was not fought by the majority of Americans. There were a group of people, a small group of people, that decided to go to war. And if you know the history, there was, you know, like 7% most of the people that were actively engaged in the war and going against Britain. We'll get more into this when we come back after these two promos. Thank you so much. Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org and let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station. Don't forget, you can call our 24-hour comment line to ask a question or to speak on any topic. Dial 425-270-5416. Okay, so getting back into these committees of safety, what I want you to really understand, folks, is that we actually have everything we need. What we do need, and you know, the committees of safety is getting organized down at the county level. Well, what do we actually have at the county level within our constitutional framework that we can use to get organized? Well, gosh, folks, it's the unorganized militia. There is no law or no regulation that says the unorganized militia cannot get organized and actually start applying citizen vigilance. We're not talking about creating a bang, bang, shoot up unorganized militia. We're talking about creating a citizen vigilance where everybody that's a part of the unofficial militia for each county, because there's lots of these militias out there, they should equally be a part of the unorganized militia. And every citizen of the county should be a part of it, because everybody has the due diligence and the requirement to actually supporting the Constitution. It's a part of our oath as a citizen. We are to support and defend the Constitution as citizens of the United States against enemies foreign and domestic, and willing to actually take up arms if necessary. And so by creating an unorganized militia, we're not actually, you know, creating battalions and divisions and company, you know, companies, platoons, in any level of military or, you know, paramilitary infrastructure. What we're creating is a organized citizen vigilance set of committees that are actually going to start working in using the tools of the Constitution, because the weapon that we have is our First Amendment petition. We have the Constitution, common law grand juries, common law courts. We have plenty of weapons within the Constitution to demand that we have constitutional rights to actually apply to our government as well as to our public servants, that if they do not behave, they will be gone. And so the problem is we've got these, I'll just call them, just like in those days, the Tories. There were plenty of counties. There were plenty of places where the people just supported the, you know, whoever was handing out the goods first. And so there were quite a few of the colonists that were British loyalists. They didn't see a real reason, you know, because many of them were, you know, not being susceptible to some of the taxes and oppression. You know, the Stamp Acts, the Intolerable Acts. Some of these things were not necessarily that egregious or perceived that badly by many of the colonists. So, you know, the colonists, what they were seeing over there was, wow, they're really taking this to the extreme. And it's kind of like what we're seeing today. Because there are a lot of people that are, I don't want to say taking it to the extreme. That's probably not the best way of putting it. But we are recognizing that this is all unconstitutional. These are violations. And who's to say that? Well, anybody that makes those assertions has to back it up. And the only way you can back that up is by empirical data. Do you have legally binding terms and definitions of what is constitutional, what isn't constitutional? Yes, we do. We actually have the ratification debates that actually proves that the government can't create all this debt. They can't spend, they can't do anything that's not enumerated. We have plenty of empirical data. We have the data. We have the facts. Now, I find it ironic that Satan and these evildoers were, you know, they weren't blatant in America by having the burning of textbooks and all of that, because we were pretty smart. When we broke away from England, we were pretty smart characters because we understood censorship. We understood that it would have been a sign that, hey, you know, there's these rulers that are, you know, actually trying to purge, like we see today with the purging of our statues. That's absolute censorship. And there's no space or place for censorship in America. This is why they didn't deploy that desperation in America. I want you to understand this. And that is why we have access to these documents that contradict everything that they're saying and doing. And so this is why they constantly just, you know, they dismiss. I mean, when Pelosi was asked, do you have the constitutional power? Yeah, we have it right here. She didn't provide any irrefutable evidence. She didn't cite Madison or didn't go to the ratification debates and say, clearly, these things are delineated right here, 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 and here. I mean, anybody that wants to actually create an academic argument would do that. They don't have the academic argument at all. They're in that type of position. So, folks, we have the upper hand. We really have the irrefutable upper hand. It's that simple. So anyway, getting back to these Tory acts. On January 2nd, 1776, this is the big one. This is the mother of them all. And this is where the Continental Congress really kind of stretches forth this paradigm that, you know, there has to be these laws and these, because I won't have time to read all of this, to do this in one day. There has to be this measure. And so they started realizing that they just couldn't go out and arrest all these people They just would, they would not have the ability to do that. But they knew one thing, that moving forward, they needed to know who their enemies were. And in so doing, they actually held this, you know, if it wasn't really a court. They just basically went to the data and said, well, we have the evidence here of you supporting Britain throughout the Revolutionary War. Boom, 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 boom. And therefore, and so the people that were kicked out of America, the people that were kicked out because they were loyalists to Britain, they lost everything. They were not entitled to their property. They were not entitled to anything other than what they could carry, what they could walk out onto that ship and go back to the motherland of Britain. Many people actually, you know, instead of going back to Britain, they didn't want to go back there because they knew that their station in life would be much lower. So they actually moved to Canada. This is one of the reasons why Canada has, it has this huge divide between English and French, because prior to that, I mean, most of the people up there were French. I mean, there were English settlers, but don't understand, you know, how everything was broken down and the migrations of people, because I just don't care. If you really want to understand the migrations of people of America, the best book you can read regarding that would be by Thomas Sowell, and it's called Black Rednecks and White Liberals. He gets into the four waves of Brits that actually came to America at different stages of time and why the South had a different... One of the things he points out, forgive me for going down this rat hole, but he points out that the, when the people, the, and I'll just call them the dredges of Ireland, Scotland, and so forth, these people were really heathens. They lived in a culture, or their culture still kind of clung to the thought that in the morning there's this practice. You had bedpans, so you could, or commodes, and you had these little commode, you know, cabinets where you'd put your stuff, you know, in the middle of the night, and in the morning you'd pour that out, you'd dump that out into the street. And in a civil society, you wouldn't just throw it out the window. You'd kind of go and dispose of it because this is human waste, right? And so a civil society, they'd do that. But in these cultures where these people had this slang like Scots or Irish or what have you, they were, people knew who they were, because if you visited them, you didn't walk down the street in the morning, because when people woke up, they'd throw their, you know, their commode pans right out their front window, right out into the street. I mean, it was pretty, I'll just use the words, uncivilized. And so they recognized these people when they came to Boston. And but Sowell points out, he says, don't even get off that ship. You're not welcome here. Keep going. And so they were told to keep going, and they were told to keep going until they were far enough south to where the people there didn't necessarily recognize them, so that they were allowed to kind of migrate to the southern states. And I find it really interesting how Thomas Sowell points out how these, the society where these people came from actually civilized shortly after many of them were migrating out. But it didn't get civilized in America for quite a while. And so many of them, and Thomas Sowell really gives you a good picture, I think, of comparing and contrasting. You know, we all came from, you know, I don't want to say troglodytes, but we all came from an unknowing society. We all came from the same, are we all not children of our Creator? And do we not all have the same history? It's just that some people got it sooner than others, and some people, you know, for whatever reason, they just rejected those things. I mean, that there are people today that are, we call them aborigines, native people living off of the land or what have you, that, you know, they just are left to their own device. Instead of saying you have to become civilized, you know, there are plenty of nations that allow that. Now, I believe that a civil society tries to help and aid those people, not trying to indoctrinate them away from their culture, but at least tries to help aid them to assimilate. That's what was going on in America. And we talked about that before, but when we come back, we will dive back into these Tory acts so that you kind of understand what we're talking about here. So we'll be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much.
Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on reclaimingtherepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much.
To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416.
Okay, so they created this first message, resolved that they arrest everybody, right? And then they came out, this is in the second paragraph, resolved that it be recommended to the different committees and other friends to American liberty in the said colonies to treat all such persons with kindness and attention, to consider them as inhabitants of a country determined to be free, and to view their errors as proceeding rather from want of information than want of virtue or public spirit. So they actually, you know, had to kind of back off a little bit, because what they realized was that there weren't that as many support. The majority of Americans weren't hardcore supporters. There were way too many what we call fence sitters. There were a lot of people that, you know, well, why do we care about this? Those people who were entrepreneurs, those people who were businessmen, those people, and let's put this in context. How much of a tax was the Stamp Act's tax when they started to ask, you know, for a little bit of money out of every transaction by, you know, having to have a stamp done? Most all of the taxes, the tea tax was a tenth of a penny. That's what I said, a tenth of a penny. So the taxes were levied upon the businesses, not necessarily upon the people. So it was the businesses that had to in turn turn around and raise their price just a little bit to cover their prices, to cover their costs. And so they didn't like that. And so this is why when you start looking at the Sons of Liberty and these people that started calling for this revolution, most of them were, you know, well-to-do businessmen or what have you. This almost has a very similar context to the Civil War, why the Southern states seceded, because they refused to give up their institution of slavery. Well, in the Revolutionary War, they refused to actually be subjugated to having to accept this tax and pass it on to those people who could barely pay what they're paying. And so things were not going very well in the colonies, but most of the people didn't realize why. And as a matter of fact, if you ever read any of the views of Madison and many of the framers, they looked at the average American citizen as a pretty dumb and ignorant person. Education and being literate was not a common thing. However, and Alexis de Tocqueville in his book, Democracy on America, really dives into this because he noted the same thing. He noted that people weren't very literate. There weren't a lot of people that were learned. But there were a lot of people that were spiritual, that the book that they did read was the Bible, that the little reading people had, they read the Bible. And so he noted that America was great. This is the old adage that Alexis de Tocqueville is basically coined for. This is what he stated, that people constantly cite him on this. America is great because America is good. Morally good. They're going to church and they police themselves and they police their behavior. That deduction right there gave the enemy what they needed to know in deducing how to bring down America. We had to take away the morality of the people. And how are they doing so far, folks? Look how far they've gone. We have less than half that are considered active members of Christianity, and even a smaller percentage that are actually going on a regular basis to church and having their worship and their, you know, worshiping their faith and so forth. And so I'm here to tell you that we are looking at the point where they know this, Satan knows this, that even though we're not down to Lot and Lot's family in Sodom and Gomorrah, they believe they're in the position now where they can move upon us with fury and with prejudice, and they are. And they will, and it will continue. It starts off in small, if you want to consider these small increments with vaccinations and so forth. Eventually, the mark will come. And I am here to tell you, lots of people believe the mark is going to be an RFID. I'm going to have Mark Lerner on, and Mark Lerner made his mark in, I will just say, the annals of American history as a part of the founder of the Constitutional Alliance. He made his mark when he pointed out, and I came to the same conclusion that he did. I wasn't in a position, nor was I smart enough like he, and was starting to work with legislators and creating laws and so forth. So if you don't know who the Constitutional Alliance is, you should check them out. It's the same thing with my working with the National Liberty Alliance and what the National Liberty Alliance is. We're going to have both Mark and John Durash on. So we're going to have some interviews, and we're going to actually have more interviews this year than we've done in a long time. And that's because I want to start bringing people on that are doing things. I want people to see leaders in America, because if you realize that there's other people leading and we're here to help you lead, what's your excuse now? I mean, I'm actually telling you, we're here to help you lead. We're not telling you to follow us. We will work with you. We will help you, and we're not from the government. How's that? So anyway, getting back to the Tory acts, as we can see, they started changing their tune because they realized that they didn't want to create a revolt to their revolt. Because if they started arresting these folks, then down the road, they would be sorry because, you know, next thing you know, you realize that you just don't have the majority, and they realize that you don't have the majority, and then they turn on you and you've just lost your revolution. So what they had to do is they had to change their tone. They had to go, well, we want to be nice. However, one of the things that they did do was they did account for who they were helping. So that by the time the revolution was over, everybody could list names of people and the events and how people were assisting the communist, or I should say, in our time today, it's the communist movement, this Bolshevik revolution. And what they were doing back then was identifying who was supporting the crown and the British, the British side, the British forces. And so if you go read, you'll find that about 100,000, now that's 100,000, if we had 1 million, that would be 10%. If we had 10 million people, then that would be 1%. So it was more than 1% of our current society, of their time. It was more than 1%, because I think they had maybe 3 million, something like that, I think. And we're not talking about the slaves. I'm just talking about the whites in America. It was a pretty, it was a small percentage. So it was pretty close to maybe a half a percent, or not a half percent, 5%, I mean, 4 or 5% of the people. And some analysts believe it was around 7% of the people were actively engaged. There were lots of fence setters. And then there was this other 3, 4, 5, 6, 7% that were, you know, on the other end supporting Britain and supporting their cause. So all of these folks that were identified that didn't leave on their own, there were people that left on their own long before the Tory acts were enforced, or the Tories were kicked out, I should say. There were plenty that abandoned and had no expectation. I think the Belvoirs, when they left, they had no expectation. They realized that they were supported the wrong side, but they had their affinity towards the crown. And they knew that they could not stay. They were good, close friends. As a matter of fact, if you know anything about the Belvoirs and George Washington, President Washington had a very close, and I would say not sexual, but an intimate relationship with Mrs. Belvoir. They wrote all the time. He really enjoyed her companionship in a platonic sense. And so, I mean, they could have been brothers and sisters. The way it was put in some of the autobiographies, it was almost like it was torrid, but it really wasn't. And it's very similar to Thomas Jefferson. But they understood that if a woman was married, a man really shouldn't have, you know, that type of relationship, because it could lead to what Hamilton did, where Hamilton was out literally committing adultery. So anyway, when we start looking at, you know, the Belvoirs and this relationship and how they just walked away, and I mean, it's absolutely saddened George Washington to see his good friends of decades just get on a boat and go away. There were plenty of people that did that, but when the Tory acts were enforced, there was about 100,000 people that were kicked out. They estimated 90 to 100,000. We don't know. It could have actually been more. I don't think that they err on the downside. I think they just say, we know of at least this many. So that's still a lot of people. That's about 3 to 7% of the population. Now in America today, we got 330 million. Let's say the numbers are the same. Because when you start looking at these two sides, the Bolsheviks and the real conservatives, maybe the numbers are the same. Isn't history interesting? We have to revisit the Tory Acts. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. And we'll be back with our guide to committing or creating effective goals. God bless.
Folks, as you know, online fraud is on the rise, and it's more important than ever for your new and existing customers to be able to determine whether they are using a website with a secured connection. If you didn't know, Google mandated in 2017 that all data submitted to its linked websites must be secure with SSL certificates. Without SSL certificates, your site is listed by Google as not secure. In other words, without these certificates, your site will be harder to find, and this will impact new traffic and ultimately your revenue. Whether you're a blogger or in e-commerce, AdLocal will help protect your website from all forms of data breaches, phishing scams, and build a secure environment for your businesses, big or small. Contact AdLocal by calling 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com for custom pricing.